Hello and welcome. In particular, still welcome to all those who care and dare to listen. This is yours truly, recording on the 8th of August, 2018, with a special invitation to Take Five with the Turton. So I've introduced the talk with a little bit of music, a little cut of music from Maria Zhao, Take Five. This particular talk is going out to those on the mailing list, which includes future members of NEMATA. So I'm here in the Radio Gainam studio with the incomparable Ginny Thwaite, also known as Bussy the Sniper. And we are inviting you for a little Take Five with the Turton to celebrate a rather special event. And Gina will tell you exactly what that is.
So today is the 10th anniversary of the Terma of Gaia Awakening. So happy anniversary, John, and happy anniversary to all of us.
Indeed, to all of us. It's not just my anniversary, but it's most definitely a planetary anniversary.
How many seconds of her time?
Well, that's about 33 seconds of her time. 3 years is 10 seconds of her time. 9 years is 30 seconds, and then there's 33 seconds. As you know, being talented the way I am, I can't add or subtract very well.
You do better than me.
Unless it involves cosmic figures, then I'm fine, right? So here we are in the studio, happy to be here, happy to be alive.
You thought it would be a good idea to sit and record this today, just to mark the occasion.
It was my proposal, after all. It's just you and I here, with a few animals wandering around. And also, we've done this for the last 4 years together.
Yeah.
That is to say, we've been together on this occasion for the last 4 years, but I don't think we really commemorated it in a particular way, did we?
Well, it's usually been with margaritas, John.
That's true. It's usually with margaritas. I'm sipping a little bit of Cava, which is cheap Spanish champagne, and
I've got a beer.
So here we go.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Happy anniversary.
Thank you.
So would you, what are your reflections on these past 10 years since you got the Terma of Gaia Awakening?
Well, I have, I guess I could say I have two reflections, the short one and the long one. The short reflection would be an example of Paramatta Satya, and the long reflection would be an example of Samvritti Satya. And those are Sanskrit terms I've used before to refer to a syntax that you find in Buddhism. As you know, I discard a lot of Buddhism, but I find this syntax to be particularly helpful. And it is the distinction between ultimate and relative truth. So Paramatya Satva is the ultimate truth, and Sambuddhi Satya is the relative truth. So what I feel today, you know, what I see from where I live, in a perspective of, you know, ultimate truth, I would say that each day is a moment that evaporates like dew on the lotus of eternity. You mentioned that the other day, about how time
evaporates.
Is just evaporating, the days just evaporate.
Mm.
So if you picture the lotus of eternity with dewdrops on it, and then you just picture them one by one, just ping, ping, ping. They just evaporate. Those are the moments of our lives. The moments of the day evaporate, the days evaporate, the weeks evaporate, the months, the years.
And lives evaporate.
And lives. Yes, and our lives in those dewdrop moments, carried and transferred through those dewdrop moments, they just evaporate. You know, what's the difference between the breath I'm taking right now and the breath I took in the morning of August 2008?
Mm-hmm.
August 8th. What's the difference between those breaths? You know, you can't measure it. But stepping back and looking at it, I have to say I'm floored and astonished that 10 years have gone by in a flash, and I'm still here.
And you shouldn't be here.
No, I shouldn't be here. We can talk about that as well. That's a little Tertonic anecdote. But
so this is kind of a Terton's recapitulation, isn't it?
You could call it that, yes.
And what is a recapitulation?
Well, that theme, that practice, comes from Carlos Castaneda, and it's described in meticulous detail, I believe, in The Eagle's Gift. According to Carlos, and he made this all up, of course, what he made up happens to be true. The sorcerers would, time to time, the sorcerers in that tradition, in Don Juan's lineage, Don Julian's lineage, would put themselves in boxes. They would sit in a kind of a box or a cage, and they would recapitulate meticulously, remembering backwards or forwards details and events of their lives. And this is a method of a shaman that I've used many times. I advise people to use it. And it is a method that has a twofold result. First of all, by going back through your memory, or coming back forward from memory, because those are the two time ways you can remember, from the present into the past and from the past forward to the present. You have two remarkable and discernible effects. One effect is it strengthens and tightens the tensegrity of your life force, because memory is really the lifeline that we hold on to live. If you lose your memory, you could still be alive, but you wouldn't know who you were. You know, I've lost my memory. I had total amnesia in Nepal once, when I was sitting there looking at the Himalayas. Memory is the lifeline to the continuity of your life, and this exercise tightens the tensegrity of that line. The other thing it does, of course, is it allows you to clear the emotional residue of certain experiences in the past which might be holding you back. But we do it in our own way in Planetary Tantra, and this is just a light-hearted little exercise in recapitulation.
And it was just to mark the anniversary, wasn't it?
Really, we've never done this before. We've been together 4 times, and we never really did much of anything to commemorate it. So I thought this time, being the 10th, why not?
Yep. So do you want to talk us back through when you got the terma? I mean, not the whole process, because most of us know that story already. What's happened since you got the Dharma?
Well, it seems to me, it looks to me, like so much has happened since I got the Dharma. You know, to recapitulate a little, I found myself down there in the mountains of Andalusia in the Serrania de Ronda. I don't even know how it's pronounced.
Serrania.
I pronounce it to Serrania, but I don't think that's the way it's pronounced. Anyway, down there in the mountains around Ronda, looking out to Africa, I found myself down there in December of 2006, 2 months after, 1 month after Nodding's Image came out. And at that time, 2006, you know, I had just produced that book. I was writing for metahistory.org. And honestly, I mean, in 2006, I was 61 years old, 61 first birthday. I just had no sense of the future. I didn't know what I was going to do. I had no glimpse of what was coming around the bend. So then 2007 came along, and that whole story that I've told a number of times.
The Emma story.
The Emma story. And then it got around to 2008, and it got around to April 2008. Sunday, April 6th, 2008. That was really the day. Now, even though the Dharma came on the 8th of August, 2008, it was really in April that I was pulled, you could say, or handled, directed, guided into the initiation that led to the Dharma. And I had no idea what was being done with me at the time. No idea. Until that moment when I went up on the ridge. And I've recorded that in a number of, I think, a couple of essays on Meta History.
And you explained it on the G&E.
I did? Mm. I talked about it on the G&E?
Yeah.
Yeah. I went up to the ridge and I was feeling sheepish. Because I was so obsessed with this romance on the rocks that I'd just been through, that I couldn't concentrate on those matters which are the duty of a Tertan to clarify and expound. And so I went up there, you know, thinking, oh, it was in, I think it was on the 25th of June, 24th or 25th, traditionally celebrated as St. John's Day, the festival of the summer solstice. What they do in Spain on those days, down in the south of Spain where I was living, near Malaga, near Estepona, is they build a huge effigy on the beach. It's sort of like a... Do they do that on Guy Fawkes?
Yeah.
And they burn this huge effigy, mm-hmm. right? So that was that day. I went up to the ridge and I thought, oh, wow, I better deliver here, you know. I'm not concentrating on my Teutonic duties. I'm going to go up and I'm going to ask the answer fire how the human species is going to get through the sixth extinction. Because at that time, I had the certainty of having her attention for about 4 years. So I could have the arrogance to go up and ask a question like that.
Did you do that with psychoactive plants?
Yes, I did, I believe. I climbed up there on the ridge all on my lonesome. I had the support of a genial plant species, which facilitates your contact with the intelligence of the earth, facilitates your overcoming the what I call the sheen of your ego. The ego casts a sheen, and that sheen is like a, it's like the glare on a windshield when you're driving toward the sun. You can't really see the true power and beauty of the earth with that ego sheen. So the plant allies temporarily take it away from you. And I said, okay, well, tell me about the future of the human species. She gave me the epitaph of the human species. Perish for failure
to observe beauty.
To observe beauty. But then my guardian Kali, who lived on that ridge, who lives still there, I suppose, delivered a massive message to me, which I wasn't expecting. That's where I describe, I think it's in something about a sane witness. I don't forget what I call it. Gaia responds to a sane human witness.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's when I describe my guardian Kali hitting me right between the eyes, like a freight train just coming through at 80 miles an hour. And she said, you know, don't worry because you're obsessed with, you know, your sexual romantic blah, blah, blah. But it's only just a tool I use. Your personal life, your emotions, your despair, your passion, it's just a tool I use for a transcendent purpose.
Life handed you that woman, but they used her.
Exactly. That's what she showed me. And she said, I'm handling you, and this is a massive initiation. And out of this, what you call in your human terms, you know, this romance on the rocks that you had is actually the condition for the initiation of a planetary terma.
Which lasted 108 days.
Which lasted 108 days until the 21st of July. And that's when I had the Rhonda moment.
Mm-hmm.
And then 18 days after that, the terma came. So there's a structure to all this, and I repeat that to people. I will repeat it again, probably. And I have written about it so that you can record the particular events, the particular human events that led to this terma, which is not a human event, but a supernatural transhuman event. So the one thing that I might add to clarify something, because I've been thinking about this today. You know, I've told Emma's story, but I don't know if I've told about the conditions under which I received the terma, because I was with someone else at the time.
Your Shakti of the moment.
Shakti OTM, Shakti of the moment. So let me just take a moment, without getting tedious and sentimental and self-indulgent, to clarify something about that. The nature of this tantra, which is the dynamic, erotic, planetary spell that comes with planetary tantra, that comes with the recognition of Sophia, the recognition of her story and so forth, the nature of it is such that it accommodates both permanent and transient relationships. So those of you out there who come into planetary tantra may find that you have permanent and lifelong relationships within that path. Okay? And I wish that you do. I absolutely and totally wish that you do. But even if you don't, you can have temporary encounters that are equally powerful and important. You know, there was a woman with me on August 8th in my house in Gaucin, Spain, where the terma was delivered. That woman is no longer in my life. You may think, well, how can this be? How can two people who have shared such a momentous event not be together anymore? But I tell you that the nature of this energy, if you want to call it that, is that it constellates meetings between men and women. But those meetings do not necessarily have to last. They can last, they can be enduring, and they can also be transient, both ways. That's a really important point I want people to understand. So my Shakti of the moment was a woman named Jean, and I respect and honor her to this day, although she's not been in my life for many years. She's a painter. I looked up her site lately. She's her agent now is Saatchi & Saatchi.
Oh dear.
Oh dear. So I'm assuming that she's, you know, doing pretty well, and I wish her well. I actually love her painting. I think it's fantastic.
It's good.
It's really good. But the fact that she and I were there and that we shared a moment of what they would technically call, you know, in Tibetan Buddhism, consort yoga, put that in quotes, consort yoga. We were in a moment of consort yoga when I received the term. But what does that mean? Well, it doesn't mean anything that you might think, that we were practicing elaborate rituals or doing sexual tantra or anything like that. Nothing of the sort. We were simply in the open-ended passion and delight of the romance. We were in the romantic glow of human love at that moment, and the terma was delivered in that glow. That is a fact.
Relationships that you're describing, whether they're enduring or they're transient, they're the dew on the lotus.
They're the dew on the lotus. They're figures that you can see. These relationships, these encounters, are like figures that you can see as you gaze into the dew on the lotus of eternity, which is now. So, what's next?
You were just getting up to speed with the chronology of the terma.
Right. As I reflect back on the chronology of the terma, I would point out now that after the terma came, the terma came in a tremendous state of mania. You can read about mania if you read Plato's dialogue of the Symposium, Divine Mania. So I was in a state of divine mania for about 8 months, from October of that year into the spring. Actually, I remember toward the end of the year it started to kind of fade out a little, so December or January of 2009. And then I was kind of lost, really. I didn't know what to do with the term after I got it. I went to the United States in January of 2009, and I officially launched the terma. I think it was the 26th of January, 2009. I put it on the internet. And I was with Jeanne at that time at her apartment in White Plains, New York. And then I came back to Europe in February. We said our goodbyes to each other in March, honorably, lovingly, with tears and laughter. It was a good closure. And after that, I was kind of adrift for a while, really. I really didn't know where to go or what to do with it.
So is this when you had the young Bulgarian turn up in your life?
Right. I had I guess you'd call her a millennial. She was, I think, 23. She came to see me at that time.
Because she'd read Meta History and got all
the things. She wrote me, contacted me in beginning of 2009, and I was really impressed by what she wrote me. It was clear that, that she was super smart. It was also clear that she knew the narrative by heart. She asked me questions about the Sophianic narrative and details about unfinished parts of it that only someone deeply immersed in it could ask. This is like a 23-year-old Bulgarian girl who came from Sofia, Bulgaria. She was from Sofia. So that was pretty significant. And she was a figure. She's called the mermaid in the Yeats translations. And she was a significant figure in the interim of time. Also, she was there in April of 2009, just about the time that she showed up, when I was dropped by the Marian Foundation. I had been writing for them for about 7 or 8 years writing metahistory.org.
So they funded it, didn't they?
They had funded that, and they had been providing me with a salary during that time. They dropped me quite abruptly. I think it was in part due to the fact that my writings and ravings on Planetary Tantra and KaliYuga.org were beyond the pale as far as they were concerned. So I didn't have that support anymore, yet I continued to do even more to promote, write about Planetary Tantra. And Sabina, that was the girl's name, was my companion at that time. It was really good for me to have a young companion in my life and someone super intelligent in her own way.
Well, you've called her a genius.
She was a genius. She was a potential genius. I needed someone young because I was thinking about the future of the Terma and the future of my legacy. And I was thinking, well, who's going to be my heir? You know, who is going to be, who's going to receive the, you know, the benefit of my legacy, and who's going to carry on the Terma? And I looked to a younger person for the very simple reason that the Terma is going to last till the year 2216. So I thought maybe it would be appropriate to hand it over to somebody younger than myself.
Sabina came to live with you then for a while.
Yeah, she shared my house.
So it wasn't a love relationship. It wasn't a sexual relationship. It was platonic.
You could call it platonic. Yes, you could. It was, for me, it was a relationship of, what is the word? I wanted a beneficiary of my estate, and I also, it was a mentor relationship. Mm. And also, she was really gifted as a psychonaut, and we did a number of psychonautic and, adventures together, which were magnificent. We were on the ridge together at a full moon. We even did some LSD together, which was remarkable.
You did ayahuasca ceremonies with her.
And then later on, at the beginning of 2010, she and I went to a place which was about a half an hour from where I was living, in Galveston, and we participated in an ayahuasca circle, and we did 4 ayahuasca sessions together. That was in 2010. But looking back on it, I have to say that from the spring of 2009 through that year, through 2010, down to the end, I was kind of, I wouldn't say I was lost, I just didn't know where to take this powerful event. I didn't know where to go next.
So Sabina left, eventually. Then what happened?
She left in August of 2010, and it was around that same time, fall of 2010, that I was contacted by someone called Thomas Malone, who lives in Japan. Right. Thomas Malone, an American living in Japan, contacted me, and I began to do these series of talks with Grok the Talk, which was the platform that he had at that time. And I must say, I'm grateful to Thomas Malone for showing up at that moment, because he did provide a kind of a raft, and he provided a structure that led me then to the GNE, which was launched in May of 2011.
You did a series of talks with Thomas called Planetary Tantra, which is about 14 talks in all, I think. They're available on geistboy.org.
That's right.
You don't like listening to those talks, but I think many of us have enjoyed them, and we got so much about Planetary Tantra from them. I would advise anyone to go and listen to those talks, because there are some gems in there.
For me, it was really a lifesaver. I was on my own.
Small raft.
Yeah, a small raft, right. Very small raft. I was on my own. I didn't have the support of the Marianne Foundation anymore. I was writing massively. I wrote the
You were writing manically at that
manically,
time.
Manically.
You were staying up all night, observing the sky and writing till the early hours of the morning.
As I had done for many years already. I wrote the Tantric Conversion. That material, I created the sub-site of metahistory.org. I created a sub-site of Tantra, loaded it with material, loaded KaliRising.org with material. But I was basically a lone voice, just doing these interviews. I wasn't doing any solo recordings. That's a significant difference. But I was writing massively, and I didn't start to do the solo recordings until I launched the GNE.
So what inspired you to launch the GNE?
Well, as I was doing these interviews with Thomas Malone, Grok the Talk, a conversation started which led to the subject of following the moon and the importance of following the moon. Now, I had already established in my writings on planetary tantra how to follow the moon. One of the things that came with planetary tantra in the zip pack of the terma was the correlations between the 13 constellations and the Mahavidyas and the Diamond Sky Dakinis. As you know, because you follow this now, you know it by heart, you breathe it and live it every day, that material is the core to the practice of planetary tantra, part of the core. So I had elaborated that part of the terma, I had set out the method, I had shown how the Fibonacci series operates in the lunar cycle, I had correlated the Mahavidyas and the Diamond Sky Dakinis to the constellations. I had done all this, but I had done it all virtually.
Virtual.
On my own. Yeah, I'd done it in the virtual.
Yeah.
And I had no body of students following it at that time. So what happened in the spring of 2011 was the idea came up for me to teach five people. There were only five people at that time. There was Holly, who was a long-time loyal planetary tantra practitioner. There was Thomas alone, and there were three other people. I can't even remember who
Fletch
they were.
Fletch was one, I think, wasn't he?
Maybe. I don't think he was, no. I don't know who they were. So I started out with five people and kind of a distribution mail. And I said, okay, I'm going to show you something really, really neat. I'm going to show you something really, really cool. And that is how to observe the moments when the moon is closer to the earth and further from the earth.
Apogee and perigee moments.
The apogee and perigee of the moon. And I'm going to describe to you, first of all, I'm going to put you on a time calendar. I'm talking here to five people. Put you on a time frame where each month you can observe these moments. And I call them surges. And I said, now these moments are not something I've invented. They're actual astronomical moments. Astronomers observe them. Amateur astronomers may even observe them. And even people who don't know anything about the technicalities of the Earth-Moon dynamic observe them. Why? Because everybody sees that sometimes the moon is really, really big and sometimes it's really small. Why is that? Because of the fact that the lunar orbit is elliptical. And sometimes the moon is closer to the Earth, sometimes more distant. So I start to lay this out, and then something really momentous happened in March of 2011. And it turns out, you know this story well, so maybe you could paraphrase it a little for me. Something happened that I had been anticipating for what, like 40 years, which was the moment when the velocity of the lunar, of the barycenter, would exceed the speed of sound, right? And this is this thing that I had in my mind for a very, very long time. And at the moment that I started to put out this method of observing the apogee and perigee of the moon to these people and bringing it to their attention, I realized that it was coming to the attention of the entire world simultaneously that I was bringing it to the attention of five people. And that was due to what? The supermoon of the Fukushima accident. Right?
Accident in inverted commas.
So at the very moment that the Fukushima event occurred, millions of people around the world were watching the sky for a supermoon. Well, a supermoon occurs when the moon is full at the position of its perigee, closest to the sun.
Closest to the earth.
Closest to the earth, excuse me. Perigee means closest to earth. Mm. And so there is this enormous convergence of this little tiny five-person email distribution that I was doing with these people, and a momentous event that was being observed all around the world. And then it dawned on me, wow, this is the signal of the beginning of Sophia's correction. And I swear, till the moment it happened, I could not anticipate how it would happen. But because I'd been waiting for that moment for decades of my life, I caught it at the moment it happened. And then I decided, well, I must initiate this project called the Gaia Navigation Experiment so that we can track the reset of this experiment.
So by the time you started actually executing the journey, I think you got quite a few more people on your email list by that point.
Well, that's the first time that I ever put out a query to create a distribution list, as it's called. Until then, I had no distribution list of students. Mm. I never promoted Planetary Tantra. To this day, I don't promote it.
So your query came from just people who had written to you to say they love metahistory or they like Planetary Tantra or whatever. So you ended up writing an invitation to just...
Yeah, I dragged through my emails, and I think I compiled about 200 email addresses. Yeah. And I sent out the invitation to the GNE.
Yeah, so there were many people on that list who are still in Planetary Tantra today. They were original crew members of the GNE and still loving it.
The veterans, they've got their sea legs.
Yeah.
I salute them.
They're all salty old sailors now.
Salty old sailors now. So the GNE began in March of 2011, and it was a three-year event until March of 2014. And in that event, I actually plotted the reset process by which the Aeon Sophia reset this experiment, acting from within the experiment. And from March of 2014 onward, she began to implement her correction. That's right.
And you found your speaking voice during that process, didn't you?
Because
you did, if one goes back and listens to the first maybe 7 or 8 NAV briefings, you're quite you're reticent to speak.
I do a fair amount of umming and aahing.
Yeah.
Uhing.
But you perfected your solo speaking voice.
Some people would call it perfection. What would you call it?
I call it perfection. I don't know how you do it or did it.
I don't know how I did it either. But that was when I started to do solo talks from the navigation room. Those were the first solo talks. Before that, I had done a great many interviews, but no solo talks.
Do you think the GNE was one of the most challenging things you've ever done?
Yeah, it was a piece of cake.
That means yes.
Okay. Well, just listen to it and you decide for yourself if it was a challenge. By the way, what we're doing with the GNE now is a makeover of the GNE, for Nemeta.
Yeah, that's very exciting.
And we're going to come to project. That in a moment.
Yeah, yeah, we'll come to that later on. So G&E from 2011 to 2015, March.
2014, March.
Sorry, 14, March.
And then again, I was kind of cut loose. So I didn't exactly know what to do next. And I'll tell you in a nutshell, very simply, what has been the nature of my confusion over the years. It's about my student body. And what am I doing? And who am I teaching? And who the fuck am I talking to when I stand there in the nav room at 4 a.m. under the crystalline skies of southern Spain? Who am I talking to? You know, who's listening? The fuck is going on here? So there was always a question of who am I addressing and how am I getting the message out? The question of how do I organize this massive, awesomely rich body of knowledge that pours out of the terma? How do I do all that? And there were moments when the only thing that I could say was, I just don't know. Just don't know what I'm doing. I don't know who I'm talking to. I don't know how to make it all hang together. So that was sort of another period I went through.
And you birthed Celestics during the G&E. The last few months of the G&E, you were doing the Celestics talks.
After the G&E, two things happened. One is I sort of fumbled my way through the newsletters.
The newsflash.
The newsflashes and then the newsletters.
Mm.
And secondly, the impulse came back in. In fact, before the G&E was completed, in January,
yeah,
I think it was...
You were doing... In January of 2014, you were recording talks together. Not together. You were recording talks on...
In parallel.
In parallel.
18.
Yeah.
And if
and
you ask me
G&E.
Where the hell that came from, I don't know. It was around January 12th or 13th or 14th that suddenly, wham! I start delivering all this Celestics material. So I was delighted, actually, to get back to Celestics, and I produced a Celestics course, and that was good, because that gave me structure. You know, structure has really been a problem for me. Nemeta is now the ultimate structure.
Well, structure is a problem for you, and also the people that were showing up in your personal reality were a problem for you.
Yes, they were. But that changed in the fall of 2014.
Yeah.
Which is when we
met. Let's be correct. People turned up in your personal reality that were on the G&E that are still here. They're the salty sailors. The Viking, the Saxon.
Right, the Vikings.
The Celt.
The Nordic crew.
Yeah.
And there were those who got blown out of the rigging.
Yeah.
Because it was too intense for them. So, I went through that again, another transitional period, and that's when the real gems started to show up. Like the Spaniels, as I call them, whom I hold most dear in my heart.
Yeah.
Two of the most reliable, responsible, competent people.
Competent, they're superhuman.
Superhumanly competent people. Translated Not in His Image into Spanish, have done so much, have created a Spanish Medihistoria in Spanish, have created a Spanish Celestics.
Yeah.
And these gems of the Anthropos began to show up in my life after reset.
Yeah.
After reset. And gradually I began to have the sense that I had a coherent body of student allies to assist me in carrying forward my work. And that has been tremendous to me. And that has determined the future trajectory of Planetary Tantra to this day.
So that was 2014. 2015, we're calling the Year of Julie.
Right, the Year of Julie. Another
Hello, Julie.
Gem. Hello, Julie. Native American / German, you can't get any better blood than that.
Sigma.
Sigma. Hail, victory to the mother.
I know we keep saying Sigmar, and the person that got that mythophrenic fugue, which is completely awesome, I've asked him to do a recording of it, so we'll distribute that when he's done it.
That's right.
Because it's wonderful.
That's right. So 2015 is marked by a number of really significant events, and this is what we're going to conclude this talk with. So I'd like to get around to the contract.
Okay.
In 2015, in May, Julie came from Arizona, and there was the first Planetary Tantra retreat in Galicia.
Julie was a crew member of the Journey.
That's right, and is still in the heart of Planetary Tantra. So there were two Planetary Tantra retreats in 2015. This is extremely helpful to me because people arrived, students arrived, and I had the flesh and blood contact that I hadn't had up until that point. There was one in May and there was one in November down in Andalusia.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That was a tremendous year for bringing Planetary Tantra, as I say, into flesh and blood. And a year for the consolidation of my students and for the passage of command, right? So then it went into 2016, and at that time I came into the Mandela effect. We came in it together in the summer of 2016, and then at the end of 2016 was when my contract expired. No, it wasn't.
Yeah, but you had the last opportunity to renegotiate your contract in 2015.
Right.
So, in August of 2015.
So let's just talk about this a little to kind of round off this memorial event, okay?
Well, explain what the contract is then.
Well, in August of 2015, you and I sat on the terrace of my house, Gaussin, is this correct?
With Sarah.
With Sarah Z. Right.
Sarah Z, the Sarah creature.
The Sarah creature, as I call her. Greetings to Sarah Z.
Hello, Sarah.
She was there at that moment. And I chose those two women, two different generations of Planetary Tantra, as my intimate witnesses to describe something that was extremely sacred to me. So I explained to you at that time that Tertans have the ability to negotiate their death. And this is something that I'm not making up. It's actually taken from the Nyingma Buddhist Tibetan tradition. In fact, if you read about the other JL, who is
Jigme
Lingpa, right? Who is the supreme Tertan of the Nyingma branch of Tibetan Buddhism, and you read his biographical writings, he talks about this very fact. And in the book about him by Janet Gyatso, she explains this fact. So traditionally, in Tibet, the Tertan is a member of a community, is a shaman, who is able to access wisdom treasures. And the role of the Tertan is so important for the future of the community that the Tertan has the privilege of renegotiating the moment of his death. And the way this is done, I'm not going to go into it here in detail, but the way this is done is through a biofeedback loop with the entire sky. The Tertan who does this, who is able to do this feat, has to be also a sky diviner of very high accomplishment.
Which you are.
Of the highest accomplishment.
Which you are.
Thank you. And such a sky diviner is called in Tibetan a Dukpa. So the Dukpas were able not only to read the sky, but they were able to interact with the writing of the sky, which is a living code. Now, in that living code of the sky, your birth and your life and your death is recorded. Every single human being is recorded in that code. But the Dukpa is like someone who can go in and modify the code for his particular case.
So you'd already done this twice.
I had already done it two times. You have to do it over 4 days in the morning in a 16-hour ritual of the observation of the sunrise crescent. And you have to do it in the knowledge that there is one particular sunrise crescent that is the omen of your death. For me, that is the sunrise crescent that you see beneath the constellation of Auriga, the charioteer. And that occurs generally in June or July each year.
How do you know that?
I don't know. I knew that, I came to know that at some point in my Teutonic practice. It was shown to me. So on two occasions, I have done a ritual at that time of the year to secure my lifespan so that I would have time to deliver this terma. Well, when you were there with me on that beautiful August of 2015, I had the occasion or the opportunity to renew the contract for a third time.
Yeah, you had this window of opportunity.
That's right.
So you sat Sarah and I down and you explained.
That's right. We sat there drinking champagne on the porch.
Well, weirdly, I just had a conversation with your beloved cat, the Turton's cat, Nikita, because I'd learnt how to communicate with animals and she'd avoided me. And there was a beautiful rock on the driveway of your place overlooking the Straits of Morocco. Stunning view of Treasure Valley. And I was just sat there, not knowing what was coming later that day, and Nikita came and sat on the rock next to me, and so telepathically I said, "Oh, Nikita, hi, I'm so glad you came to sit by me, finally. How are you?" And she said, "Oh yeah, I'm really good," and she was slithering up against me, as cats do. And I said, "Good, how's John?" She said, "Oh, he's going to die next year." And that was all she said to me, well, that was all I heard. And I didn't say anything to anybody until you sat Sarah and I down on your upper terrace. We were drinking champagne and you explained that you had another window of opportunity to renegotiate your death or secure your death. And then I told you what Nikita had told me and it... I'm going to cry. It fitted with 271.
271 is the number. I had a dream sometime when I was up in Belgium, probably, I can't say when it was, and I saw the number 271, and I said, "Well, that's the number, that's your contract. Your contract has 271 on it." So I thought, what does this mean? So for a number of years, I thought it meant, well, maybe I'm going to die in a plane crash, you know, flight 271.
Or FHG 271.
Yeah, and I looked at, I scrutinized all my data of my plane tickets, you know. Or maybe I thought, man, well, January 27th, you know, 27, January 271.
Yeah, but you're living in Europe, so it would have been...
That didn't work, you know. So I was trying to figure out, what the hell does 271 mean? 271, I mean, I've been given in a dream the message, this is telling me when I'm going to die. And then one day I realized, well, it's so obvious. It means I live to 271.
Till you are 71.
I will live till I'm 71. And I will die at 71 unless I renegotiate.
Mm.
And so I sat there with Sarah and Ginny on the terrace and I told them all this. And I said, you know what? I'm not going to renegotiate.
That's not true, John. Let's back...
I didn't say that?
No.
Well, tell me. Go ahead. Correct me.
No, what happened is you sat and explained it to us. I told you about what Nikita said. You were shouting to Nikita, Nikita, have you been telling everyone my family secrets? What have I told you? And we all agreed that we would go with you on this practice. And then the day came and you had chronic toothache from an abscess. So we all had to get in the car, drive down the mountains and go to the coast to take you to the dentist in Marbella. And you were in agony, so it didn't happen.
What are you talking about? That never happened.
Sarah, it's true, isn't it?
I don't remember anything like that. No, seriously.
Honestly, it's the truth.
What?
Yeah.
Well, what did I say then? Did I say I was going to renegotiate it and I wanted you as my witnesses?
Yes.
What? You're kidding me. This is amazing to me. Because I don't remember it that way at all. I remember me informing you two that I had decided consciously that I wasn't going to renegotiate it a third time.
No, you said you thought about not renegotiating it, but then you said you were going to, and we both agreed that we'd accompany you. And then the day that the 16-hour window appeared, you were holding your head and screaming because you're terrible with pain, and we had to get in the car and go to Marbella to the dentist. This is what it's like, oh, life around the turtle, terrible. Honestly.
Okay. Okay. This is like a Mandela thing. There are two memory lines going here.
No.
In my memory line, what you say never happened. Okay. But your memory line, I accept your memory line. Okay. The conclusion is the same. I did not renegotiate.
No, you didn't, but what happened?
That's right. And there was a consequence of not renegotiating. That's right.
Yeah.
There was a consequence of that. So, before I say what that was, and we conclude this talk, I just want to say what I thought I was doing in my memory line at the time. This is so wild. In my memory line at the time, I thought that I said to you, why did I haul you through all this drama and all this elaborate Baroque Teutonic elaborations of destiny and everything? Why did I even do that?
You were in quite a bad place, John, at that point in your life. You weren't in a good place.
I wasn't.
No.
Well, that makes sense, because I thought that I said to you, I have a window of opportunity of 4 days to renegotiate. Otherwise, I die at 271 after I turn 71. But I'm not going to renegotiate because I just want to hand over the future, to hand over my future and to have the length of time that I continue to live to be decided by others. Didn't I say that to you?
No, you didn't.
Oh, come on. I know I said that. I didn't say that.
Sarah, please email and confirm what I'm saying.
I didn't.
No, we agreed to go with you. You said, I'm not going to do it. And we both Sarah and I said, come on, no, come on, do it. And then you said, okay. And we said we'd go with you and engage in the practice with you. And then the day, which was...
That I got a toothache, right.
You got a severe abscess.
And we went down to Marbella.
Yeah.
The three of us.
Yeah, Sarah and I went swimming. You might remember you.
I remember that. Okay. I went to the dentist when you went swimming.
We went to the beach. You went to the dentist. Then you turned up on the beach.
Fucking A. So there is some truth in your memory line. Okay. All right. So now comes the crunch. And this is the crunch. You know, Nikita was not just an ordinary animal.
No.
I used to refer to her as a 28 coil Naga cat. Because that's how powerful she was. This little animal, this little black cat with little tiny white hairs, a few white hairs, you could count them, there were probably 30 of them, had a presence that was awesome.
She was a runt. She had this gargantuan presence. You felt, one felt privileged if she even looked in your direction or walked in the same room as you. I've never met a cat like that before.
When you looked at her, she took you into this immense presence that she had, and she was my witness, and she was my intimate ally. I couldn't have made it through without her. My happiness depended on smelling her and seeing her face.
You and Nikita would just you would lie on your back on the daybed in your sitting room, and Nikita would lie on your chest, and you two would just look at each other for hours on end.
So what happened was that it came down to December of 2015. Now, I was born in 1945, so in December of 2015, I was 70. But as those of you know who follow these things closely, when you turn, for instance, 20 years old, you enter your 21st year. So when I turned 70, I entered my 71st year. And that was the year that I was due to die according to my negotiations as a Turton. But I didn't die on that day, but Nikita died.
Yeah.
On that day. So we said at the time you came down, you couldn't believe it. I think you showed up 2 days later.
No, I showed up. I flew in the same night she died and stayed down on the coast because it was late and you don't drive at night. And I stayed with a friend and got the message that she died and was devastated, obviously. And then I came up the next morning and...
It's raining.
The rain just started.
The rain just started. And you said to me, you looked at me, we were both sobbing. We buried her on the hillside by my house. You did according. And you looked at me and you said, she took the hit for you.
Yeah. She was only 7 years old.
Right.
She died of exactly the same complications that Jan, your other beloved friend, died of at exactly the same age.
We're presuming that she did, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, this cat, this little black cat, was so involved in the supernatural and transcendental transactions of fate of my life that this is something that you can only... If you can comprehend this, if you can take this kind of thing in, you can only feel just awe. I mean, you can't fucking say anything.
Yeah.
This is the workings of the sacred. It is transactions of fate, transactions of love and death.
Yeah.
And it's all real. It's no illusion. It's absolutely real. So that was a tremendous event, and not long after that, I left that place.
You had to leave. That house was desolate without her
in
it.
It was.
And we got a visit from Charlotte.
Right. We had a visit
on my birthday.
Right.
Which was not long after Nikita died.
Right. I have to say that my companion here, who is quite an incomparable witch, conjured up a power from the underworld, Sholotl, because you, Ginny, knew that I could never love another cat again. I could never have a connection that close.
You could never love a cat again like you love Nikita.
Never.
You
never
could love a cat, but not
like that. So.
So I did some cosmic ordering, and on my birthday. Sholotl arrived.
So all that's another story leading to the future, and so...
Okay, so the future is Nemeta. So
future is Nemeta.
How can you describe the creation of Nemeta in relation to the Tama?
Well, Nemeta is what I always knew I needed to bring the Dharma to the world in a secure way and in an accessible way. But I didn't know I needed it. I didn't know. I wasn't able to define it. So the Dharma came into definition, thank goddess, in the last 2 years of the, of this 10-year cycle right now. From year 8 on, 8, 9, and 10, the Dharma started to come into definition as Nemitta. And what Nemitta is simply the organ, the instrument of education through which the Dharma can be presented to people in an in a way that they can assimilate, because it's so immense and so massive that it's, when you confront it, it's overwhelming. So it has to be dosed. And Nemitta is the way that the Dharma is dosed for human consumption. That's right.
Yeah, and as I've said before, it's the way that people can actively participate in being the grail keepers that keep the narrative alive after you've gone.
Also the way that they can find their place in the Maitreya process.
Their role.
Their role in the Maitreya process,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So we're releasing this talk to bring you up to that threshold where Nemitta itself will be released, which will be on 18th of September.
This year.
Simultaneous with Lethal White. Right?
Yeah.
You're going to get Lethal White.
You'd already decided on that date before you knew about Lethal White.
Very close to that date. Mm. But what that means is that there is an event called Lethal White, which is appearing in the archonic realm of spectral forms. And then there is the real Lethal White. Okay?
And how do I say this? You, when Nemitta is released, there is going to be an exclusive released with Nemitta. Only you and I know about it at the moment.
That's right.
So you've got a micro terma delivered in the last week or
That's
so.
Right. That's right.
And it's so exciting.
Very exciting, because to round off this talk, you might ask, well, how did I view my future as a Tertan after I received the term of Gaia Awakening? You know, like, wow, that's a hard act to follow, you know. Well, I don't expect to produce any other termas. The world doesn't need any other termas, you know. I swear to you, absolutely, this is it. This is the only and ultimate terma that the world needs. And yet, you know, I continue to sort of leak the termas here and there. And together with Ginny, there was revealed a terma concerning, and this is the preview to what's coming, the true nature of moonlight. That's right. So.
Good. On that note, we'll end this.
So on that suspenseful note, cliffhanger as usual.
Happy anniversary, everybody.
Happy anniversary to all of you. Delight and delightment to all of you who have upheld Planetary Tantra to this point. And in the future, I celebrate you, and I sign off for now.